And Will, you are listening to Lunchtime Live with Ciara here on News Talk. Do get in touch with us. We want to hear from you across the board about all the things we're going to discuss between now and 2 o'clock. We are going to be discussing the election, the local and European elections that take place this Friday. 60% of primary schools are closed around the country with the ensuing difficulty. My kids are off. I actually don't have a plan yet what to do about that. But why? Why do we poll on a working day? It makes more difficult for people from rural Ireland. It certainly makes it more difficult for working parents who would expect their children normally to be in school. Why not do it at the weekend? Or equally, why do we have these giant school halls with like two desks in them and you know, three schools out of four in a local town closed? Why not put them all into the one room? There must be a better way. I'd love to know what you think about that. I have a fantastic competition for you as well. I'll tell you about that shortly. And the wonderful Gary O'Hanlon will be in with me a little bit later on too, telling us what we're having for this evening's dinner. If you want to get involved in any of the conversations here on Lunchtime Live, you can call Ciara 1890-453-106. You can also text me at 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. You can tweet us at lunchtimelivent or at kirakellydoc, or you can email us at lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. And I do want to hear from you. I also want to know what you think. We mentioned rural Ireland there in terms of the elections, the difficulty getting home to vote. Very interesting. I have coming in with me a little bit later on, Owen Sharkey of Ireland's Mobile Farm. He goes around the country with his animals in pens and shows them to kids at fairs and also in their schools so they get, you know, familiar with farm animals. He said, what do you think of this? He said that the kids in the cities are more familiar and more up to speed with farm animals than rural kids. Could that be right? That seems very strange to me. I do not know how a child that maybe grows up with fields full of animals around them would be less au fait with things like that, but that could well be the case. I don't know. Moving swiftly on, though, to something completely different. You may or may not have heard that Housing Minister Owen Murphy has been heavily criticised for endorsing plans for co-living developments in Dublin. He's called them an exciting choice for young workers. Exciting choice. Critics of the co-living blocks, which offer studio rooms with communal facilities such as kitchens and laundries, have likened the scheme to 21st century bedsits. So are you one of the young workers who might be, you know, in line to move into one of these places? Do you see it as an exciting choice? Do you currently house share? What's your experience of renting? There's so much in all of this. And to discuss this now, I am joined on the line by News Talk's reporter Aideen Finnegan, who is a young worker and indeed has a view on all of the above. Aideen, you're very welcome.
Thank you for calling me young.
You are young. Everyone's young compared to me, Aideen. But tell me this, what's your first up thoughts on what Owen Murphy said? This is an exciting choice for young workers to live in a room that is going to be something along the lines of 16 to 17 square metres, which is unbelievably the same size as a disabled parking space. And they're going to be sharing a kitchen with maybe 30 other people and sharing laundry facilities with 30 other people and maybe also some kind of shared living space where you could watch TV together. Does that excite you, Aideen?
Well, it doesn't sound very exciting to me, primarily because of having to share the kitchen with so many people and the laundry, as you mentioned there. And, you know, maybe it is exciting for a young person who's just leaving college and is kind of striking out on their own. But I think, first of all, who's going to build these apartments? So, you know, it's going to be a private developer looking for a return on this brand new building that they've built. And they're going to, you know, in fairness, as business people, they're going to need to charge a certain amount for. So I don't actually see young workers being the ones who are able to afford to live in it. A bit like, I suppose, like the student accommodation blocks. There are criticisms that it's actually only sort of people from wealthier backgrounds and maybe, you know, international students who are able to afford living in them. Like the co-living situation probably wouldn't be that bad if it was just a short-term thing, but I mean, we have such a chronic problem. I'm not sure why this is the answer to it. I mean, my main beef is every now and again I hear someone saying Ireland will just have to change. We can't just buy our own house anymore and, you know, be obsessed with home ownership. The thing is, People are obsessed with home ownership because it's the only show in town for security of tenure, for, you know, if you have kids, knowing that you will not have to move on in a couple of years and find another school. It's not easy to change houses, and it's not easy to find another school for your kids either. So, I mean, saying that people will just have to accept renting for life, I think there's a lot of people who would be happy to rent for life if the alternatives were in place. I lived in Barcelona for a year and a half, and the apartments there were huge. And, you know, they weren't massively expensive. You know, it was in the gift of people to afford them. And they had space for kids. There's an area of Barcelona called Eixample, and it's basically where you have blocks of houses where everyone's the back of their apartment has a long balcony, and it looks out onto a communal area that's safe, that's away from traffic, that's away from other people, and people would sit out there in the summer and sunbathe. I mean, that is what we should be building, not co-living, not this. I mean, to me, it feels a bit like a race to the bottom. And the first thing I thought of when I kind of read the description of co-living was family hubs for single people. Now, look, I'm not saying they're the same thing, but that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And you will get to a certain point in your life when you do not want to share your living spaces with strangers who maybe aren't as clean as you, aren't as considerate as you, and you want to know.
Absolutely. And I think it's funny you mentioned Barcelona, because the people of Barcelona would suggest that their rents are far too high and they're up in arms about tourists coming and Airbnbs and stuff. So they feel that the problem is the same, even though they're probably considerably cheaper than Dublin currently. But are you saying, and I think you are, that it's kind of a lose-lose for renters? Because on the one hand, you're being told, oh, you'll never afford to buy, so now you're a tenant type. But on the other hand, our tenants here do not have the securities that they might have in other countries. They don't have the sort of security of tenure. It's much easier to evict. There's much less protections for tenants. And equally, they're very expensive for quite small properties. Is it literally for young people now on the housing market a lose-lose?
I think it is a lose-lose, because, and you have a situation where, you know, you have people who are in their mid-30s and you know, starting to freak out going, if I can't get a mortgage in the next few years, am I going to get a mortgage from a bank when I'm 40? You know, because, you know, there's difficulties in taking out 30-year loans at that stage. And I think that if anything that has to change about how Ireland sees renting is that it has to stop being seen as a means to wealth, as in, like, that's my pension and I, you know, would have to guard that asset in that respect. I mean, I know that there's a debate to be had about institutional investors, like long-term investors, like they have in Berlin, where the tenant can stay in that building for life, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily an owner looking to cash out by selling that property for their pension at the end of it. But I mean, obviously, this is a very multi-layered thing, and we've been having all sorts of rows about it and debates about where we should go. One thing that struck me was when the housing minister was on with the Pat Kenny show the other day, when he was saying that apartments are built to a different standard when they're renting, you know, and I think what he was saying is that, you know, you have a landlord who is buying it never to live in it, to rent it. The person who lives in it for a couple of years before they move on themselves to either, you know, home ownership or, you know, a bigger place. So those apartments that are built are never built with longevity in mind. And if you want, like, if we want people to be, you know, living in the city rather than this urban sprawl, you are going to have to build bigger family size apartments with space for, you know, your Christmas tree when you're not using it during the year, or
they do have them in other countries. Can I ask you? I know you're not, you know, I do want to ask you about your own situation in a moment, but I know you're not a housing expert, Aideen, but you're somebody who is young, working in the city, and having all the experiences people have. It strikes me that these are, I mean, they've been accused of being bedsits for the 21st century, but they strike me as being worse than bedsits, because bedsits were a bit bigger than this. You did have your own little kitchenette. You had your own front door. And, you know, you didn't have to go, you know, you might have had some shared facilities, but bedsits were a bit better. Have we made a mistake? We got rid of bedsits that were cheap and bigger. And now what we're left with is, oh, we don't do bedsits, but we do this sort of thing. And it's $1,300 a month to have no space at all.
You see, that is the thing. These will not be cheap alternative places to live. You know, when you sacrifice money for space, you know, you pay less, you pay less money, but you get less space. But it's not going to work out like that. I mean, we know it won't. these will be more expensive than a house share situation. That is the way the market is at the moment. Now, maybe in 20 years' time, it'll be different, and if people don't want to live in them, they'll be very cheap because they'll be trying to tempt people into them. But they are worse than bedsits, because at least in a bedsit, you have ownership of your own kitchen space, your own fridge, your own stuff goes into the fridge. You're not worried about it going missing.
And they weren't quite this small either, in fairness, because they had to have a few more types of things stuffed into them. And
no,
they were cheap.
We did away with them for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. No, stay with me, Aideen, because Michael, one of our listeners, is on the line as well. Michael, what do you think about this? What is this an exciting choice for young workers?
No, Ed, I think it's clear that they're trying to reintroduce bedsits, but they're doing it badly. But the key point that a lot of your listeners are missing is that bedsits were a great solution in the past. I lived in a bedsit for a long time. My wife did. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people lived in
I lived in one myself.
In the past.
Yeah.
Exactly. There were shared accommodation. And then a few years back, well-meaning people tried to improve bedsits. And they brought in regulations, which meant people had to spend thousands to upgrade bedsits. And guess what? Every bedsit suddenly cost three times the amount. And all the people who are now homeless in the streets can't afford them anymore.
I know.
Because it's a law of unintended consequences.
I actually agree with you. I think we pulled the bottom rung out of the housing market and didn't have a plan for what was going to happen to the people on that rung. I do agree with you. And isn't the solution.
No, but it's people are shooting down the concept of shared living. The concept. In Russia, they have communalities. It's a standard thing to share a kitchen. It's a standard thing. That the idea of 40 people sharing it is crazy. But the principle is good if they get it done properly. But the current plans are wrong, and I agree with everybody. But the key point is we've shot out the bottom of the housing market. There is now no cheap accommodation available because in trying to give people good living spaces, we have just destroyed cheap accommodation.
We have.
It is literally impossible for somebody on the streets. For me, if I lost my house...
Yeah.
I'm in my 60s. I could not find a place right now.
I agree
with
you.
In the past, I would have gone and knocked on a door and got a cheap bedsit. I would have shared a bathroom with 10 people and I wouldn't have cared because I was buying it for, or I was renting it for one third of the cost of a normal apartment.
But these are very small and very expensive, so I'm not sure what needs these serve.
I agree these ones are wrong, but everybody's attacking them for the wrong reason. The idea of shared accommodation.
Sharing is not the problem. The problem is tiny and expensive.
It's a detail. It's a detail of the, you know, people should attract the detail and not the overall principle of having communal living.
Yeah. No, I take your point and thank you for that, Michael. Someone says, Kira, bedsits are all well and good for a small few, but they're not the answer for a lot of us. More than this crazy shared living is, what about families or couples? I don't think they were designed for families or couples, but you have to remember, I think it's half the people in their 30s are single now. They aren't families. They aren't couples. We need accommodation for all. One size doesn't fit all. No, I don't want to sound like Owen Murphy, but you hear what I'm saying. We need accommodation for all people. I'm just not sure who this accommodation is for. Aideen, let me bring you back in. You had some tweets on this and I liked them. And one of the things you said is the system is stacked in favour of home ownership. Do you feel that the haves, those who are in home ownership, are kind of happy enough with the status quo and that really it is like an exclusive club where a lot of people are locked out of it?
I think there are a lot of people. Yeah, I think it's probably natural enough that when people get sorted, they're like, oh, my battle is fought now.
Yeah.
You know, I have to concentrate on something else now. And other people have to fight their corner. But there are enough people who are absolutely trapped. And the thing about the whole system being stacked in favor of home ownership, like, that is the way we have always done things. And so that is why everyone is trying to, I mean, why would anyone... Okay, so I remember during the boom when this wasn't really an issue, there was kind of a thing like, well, why would you buy a house and you're stuck living in, you know, maybe somewhere you didn't want to live, whereas if you rent, you can rent somewhere you could never afford to live, i.e., you know, in Ranelagh or somewhere nice like that in Dublin, where you wouldn't have a hope of buying. But now it's completely different. Why would you want to buy a house? Because I can't. I need security. I need to know where I'm going to be in a few years. It's different maybe when you're in your early 20s when that's not a consideration. But, you know, it creeps up on you fairly fast and you do need to know where you're going to be.
What kind of situation are you currently in, Aideen, in terms of your own housing setup?
Yeah, so me and my husband bought last year. So this is kind of a relatively new thing for me. And, you know, we had help to do it and... you know, we're one of the lucky ones. So, but I've been renting since I was 18 up until, you know, last year.
And
I've
did you buy somewhere in the city centre or where?
No, we moved out of Dublin. I had always planned to live in Dublin. I saw my future in Dublin, but we moved out to Naas. And,
because
I'm very
of expenses
happy there now.
And costs.
But yeah, of course. Like, and this is the thing, like people have to say, now can I just say something tangentially? The people get out about millennials. I'd like to say I'm actually technically a millennial because I came of age around the year 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
Millennials are actually in their 30s. And they're, you know, and this whole thing about millennials will just have to cut their cloth to make the measure. That's absolutely true. And, you know, that's what I've done. I've compromised on that score. And also, the thing is as well is, when we were growing up, people got mortgages. I mean, you might have paid through the nose. Our parents might have paid through the nose in interest rates. But you got a mortgage when you went for it, basically. And often with one person in the house earning an income. So, you know, when people try and compare, like, you know, it's apples and oranges with the generations and millennials.
I have to say I have massive, and it's not a popular position, 18, but I have massive sympathy for the millennials. I do not believe that it is your coffee drinking and your avocado eating that has you in this position. I believe it is economic factors that are totally outside your control. And I think there's been a massive transfer of wealth from the young who are the workers to the older people who are the baby boomers, who are the property owners. And I think no one else wants to say this and no one else wants to hear it. And I own a house, so I would be hit. But I think we need big property taxes, because if we had that, we would have money for social housing. And I don't think it is reasonable to say just because you paid tax all your life, that your asset that you're sitting in shouldn't necessarily have a tax applied to it. It is wealth whether we like it or not, and not even our left-wing parties like that talk here, but I don't see another option on it.
But it's only wealth if you sell it. You know,
well, it is, but if you're living in a £3 million house, and people often say this, what about the pensioners in the £3 million house? Well, they could move to a very, very nice smaller house and live on the fat of the land off that money and still pay property tax. So it's wealth whatever way you want to look at it. We frame it differently because you live in it, but it is wealth when you consider all the people who will never own one. Then the people who own one, surely that's wealth.
Yeah. I do think it's just really unacceptable for this rhetoric to continue about millennials who just have to accept renting when the system isn't set up for people to rent long term yet. And there would be people, like, I don't think that people are as obsessed with owning a home as maybe previous generations. I think people would be willing to rent for life and be debt free, you know, never have this big mortgage hanging around their neck.
Maybe
there would be people
if there
who would
was
rent
security.
For life if there was the system there for it, that you could stay in a neighbourhood for 10, 20 years and have that certainty, and have certainty that if your rent goes up, it only goes up by a certain amount every year, and that you could plan ahead for that, knowing, okay, well, in 10 years, if my rent goes up, 4% will say, okay, I will need to be earning this much.
Yeah, and designing the housing market for those who live in it rather than those who invest in it. But look, thank you for that. That is Aideen Finnegan, their News Talk reporter. You heard what she had to say. She's struggled herself and had to move to Naas, only bought last year and needed help. I mean, that's the position of a huge number of people. Valerie is on the line. Valerie, you write for Stellar magazine. What's your thoughts on what our housing minister has said about co-living?
Well, it's not very exciting to me either. I'm 28. I live in a house with three other people, and I can't really see that changing for the time being. Like, I'm already sharing with four people, but three people, and that's difficult enough without introducing a whole other
25.
People. Yeah, I just kind of find that it's not exciting. I mean, some people will find it suitable for them, but you know, you can't really have people over. You can't really just like have a pet. You can't do anything. Which is just kind of off-putting to me, and I find it kind of unfair to them for them to expect that we should be grateful for that. It's not really a way to live for me anyway.
I find it interesting because you are co-living, and co-living per se is not wrong. I've co-lived. I think the first place I ever rented was a house with friends, and there was multiple bedrooms and loads of us in it. So I think a lot of us have co-lived over the years. I did it when I was very young, when I was a student. But equally, I was co-living with a much smaller number of people, most of whom I knew or half knew. This is a very different setup. This is living with, like, this is, I likened it to the News Talk kitchen earlier, because there's millions of us use that. And we regularly, all of us, go in and out and are grumpy about somebody's dishes in the sink and you know, somebody's cup on the edge and all that stuff. And that's true of probably all office kitchens or kitchenettes. Yeah. I can only imagine what it's like when people are living in these kind of situations.
To me, it seems kind of lonely. Like, you're just, there's loads of other people, but you're one person in one box in that house. And it's, you know, you can't be a couple, you can't, you know, have friends over, you just, that's just, you go in, you do your, you sleep, you go to work. That's what it feels like. It feels like kind of you're on this treadmill, you know.
Do you feel like you're being shortchanged? Because I'm trying to remember, you're 28, is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm 28.
I bought my first house when I was 28. Now, it was an absolute fixer-upper. It was a tumble-down house in Dublin 8 in the Liberties. It was miles away from where I'd grown up, like most people, but it was the city centre and it was livable in, and we kind of did it up slowly ourselves over time. It's inconceivable, I would suggest, for a lot of people at 28 now to do that.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, it's even kind of inconceivable for me and my boyfriend to live alone in an apartment.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like we would not be able to afford that. We've been together for 6 years. I don't know how we would progress. Like, you know, some people, you know, the formula has always been you get married, you get your house, you have your babies, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really see how that can happen in our current situation. And I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way. Like, these simple life experiences that people have are not really available to us, and it almost feels like we are being like entitled for even wanting them, which is so unfair. And it's not out of line to want your place to live, to be secure, to want somewhere that you could eventually raise a family, and, you know, to want to feel a little bit more tethered. You're totally right.
I think the housing market is disrupting the lives of people. That, like, as you say, you don't necessarily think you can get a pet. I presume you don't therefore think you can have a child.
No, yeah.
There's all sorts of things you think you can't do that you might have otherwise thought of doing.
I can't even put a poster on a wall, you know. I can't even put up a picture, you know.
If I
want to paint the wall, I can't paint the wall. And that's small things. But the idea of having a place of your own where you can do your own thing with it, that seems amazing to me. Like, you know, when people are talking about doing the renovations and stuff, I'm like, wow, imagine that.
Look, thank you for that, Valerie. And lots of people texting in with the same kind of position, I think, that you're probably in yourself. Thank you for coming on and talking to me. Someone says, Kira, co-living, just because people in other countries put up with it doesn't mean we have to. What will the social and psychological consequences be? On the other hand, we usually copy what's done abroad, but don't do it properly. Tomorrow's tenements, just because the government is incompetent on housing. A lot of people referring to this standard of co-living as tenements of the future. Equally, I don't know how we did away with bedsits. I know I'm always banging on about, but how we did with bedsits, and this is allowable. These are smaller than bedsits and more communal living. I mean, bedsits were better than this and cheaper. So something has gone awry if that is the case. I don't know what you think, but 53106 is the text line. I really do want to hear from people on this. And Sarah is on the line. Sarah, what do you make of it? I keep asking the same question. Are you excited by this choice for young workers?
I definitely think it's an option. There are people already living in Dublin. I know people living in a Georgian house in the middle of Dublin city centre. There's probably about 8 of them. They're renting a room each and they're sharing a living room and a kitchen. Some people have a tiny little room. Some people have a bigger one. And their rents are probably ranging anything between 600 to 900 a month.
Okay.
And they're living quite happily. So it's happening already.
Oh, I agree. But Sarah, these rents are going to be 1,300 per month. So you can double the 600 for the very small room. And it's 30 people, not 8 per floor. What, that's quite a difference.
I don't mind the scale of it. I think the scale can work as, you know, if it's designed properly. So we don't know what the design is just yet. But 1,300 is expensive,
yeah.
But it's also what the going average rate is to rent in Dublin. I think that's probably the national average. I'm not sure if that's the Dublin average, but that's what it is. That's where we're at.
Can I ask you what your own housing situation is?
I rented in Dublin for 22 years. I hopped and skipped all over. I'd say I moved every year. I got out by the skin of my teeth and we moved out to Wicklow Town and bought a house. We just wanted more space. We wanted a bigger house.
Yeah.
And wanted to be able to afford a house. So we moved out here and it's great.
And Wicklow Town is a lovely... How long ago was that, dare I ask?
Two and a half, 3 years ago now.
Okay.
But I had rented all over the city, and I think the type of person that is going to rent those kind of communal living spaces, multinationals, Irish people who've got good jobs, you know, the size of the room doesn't bother me because you're not living in your room, you're living in the communal space, and you're actually living in the city. So you're out all the time, or you're working. A lot of people aren't getting home from work too late anyway. So I think it's a solution. There has to start, like, you have to start accepting something somewhere along the way and start taking people out of difficulties, or, you know, at least if some of those people who have good jobs and need to find a place to live, at least they can find them.
Yeah.
All the companies that are opening up down the docks, they all need places to live.
They do, and I accept that. I have to say, Sarah, if I had, and you're saying people with good jobs, if I had a good job and I was paying $1,300 a month for a shoebox, I'd feel shortchanged. I just would. I mean, it, I know that's the average around the country, but
You're going to be spending $1,300 no matter probably what you do. You're going to be average. That's the average price.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
People, I got out by the skin of my teeth. I mean, the highest I paid was about $800 for a room.
Yeah, I know. I know it's changed, and I know the price has gone up, but it still seems to me to be poor value, and a huge amount of most people's take home pay. Yes, you're living in a shoebox.
Probably is going to be, you know, they might earn $2,500 if they're 26, 27, 28, and it's going to be all gone on the rent.
Yeah.
But there are others who will accept that and take them out of, you know, the search, open up more spaces, you know, and we have to start providing solutions.
Oh, we do.
Sure, there is a way around it in terms of the price down. There has to be another way
I don't think that's the intention of developers. I think the intention is to maximise the number of people and maximise the price. But anyway, look, thank you for coming on. I do take the point of everybody that each their own. No one is going to be forced into these places, and many people might, some people are saying, might choose to go in. Do you think it's good value? I mean, you heard what Sarah said there. You might be on $2,000-$2,500 a month. If you're on $2,000 a month and you're paying $1,300 in rent, that leaves you $700 to live on for your commute, for your food, for your clothes, for your socialising, maybe for your health insurance, for all the different things that you might have going on in your life. Not an awful lot of money from somebody who's on a decent wage and they are literally living in the size of a parking space. I think we need to get real about this. It's not ideal. Let's get some more of your reaction after this.